Pain is fear. Pain is danger. Pain is... well, it's a pain, isn't it? I'm Jamie, and I haven't woken up without pain for 4 years. It's called persistent pain. Go figure, huh? But for the last year, I've managed to cope with my pain without any painkillers. I've been on a long journey of understanding my pain, and it started when I sat down with my pain consultant, Kathy Price. It was at her busy Southampton Hospital clinic, where I asked her, for the very first time, just what is pain?
Pain is quite complicated at its very basic level. It's meant to be the wake-up call to the body to let us know that we're in danger. Without it, we don't live very long. The International Association for the Study of Pain describes it as both a sensory and an emotional response. At one level, it's the way the nervous system works. At another level, it's the way we respond to it.
So, pain is its evolutionary tactic.
Dr. David Cox, a former A&E consultant and chief medical officer at getsomeheadspace.com.
Pain is there to tell you, okay, there's something you need to pay attention to, and if possible, please don't move it. Principally, usually because you've been injured. Days gone by, that would be because you stubbed your toe on a rock and it's got infected, or you've broken something.
Say you stub your toe, what happens is that you've got tiny little spray endings of nerves in that toe, and if you've stubbed it hard enough, they convert that into electrical signals that travel up to the brain to tell you that you've stubbed your toe, so that you don't do it again, or you look and check that you haven't injured it too much. So what the electrical signals that are going from your toe are doing is waking up the brain to tell you to do something about it.
So in short, pain is there to protect you. But for anyone who has seen a doctor because of pain, I'm sure you're still wondering to this day, why on earth these doctors get you to describe your pain? After all, if it's so subjective like these doctors say, why does it matter to them if it's throbbing, or aching, or wrenching, or stabbing? Dr. David Cox again.
Pain is incredibly informative. Different kinds of pain, different sensations, are very good clues as to what's going on to people. And so you ask people to describe their pain. People will tell you it feels like a pressure, or it feels like a needle, or it comes and goes in waves. All of these things they're all pain, but they're all different characteristics.
Why is all that helpful? It's helpful because pain is a subjective phenomenon.
Dr. Chris Jenner of the London Pain Clinic.
It's extremely useful to measure pain because if you have a patient that comes who has pain, the first thing you do is you want to get a baseline of where they are. There's lots and lots of different ways of measuring pain. 0 to 10 is the simplest, and you just say basically 0 is no pain, 10 is the worst pain imaginable. What's your pain like at the moment? It's helpful because when you do start treating the patients, when they start to come back for their follow-up, you can ask them the same question again. And for instance, if their pain started at, say, 8 out of 10 and it's now 2 out of 10, you've reduced it by, 6 points. So it gives you some kind of handle on that.
Great. So now doctors know that my pain is around 5 out of 10 most days. It stabs and it wrenches. But they can't fix the cause of my pain. My tummy twisted, and I've had some pretty nasty operations to save it. It's damaged, but the pain lives on. So what about other pain sufferers? It seems to me that all we want is for someone to come flick the big pain switch off.
I think anyone in pain really would have that wish.
Matthew also has persistent pain, but his is due to nerve damage caused by a prolapsed disc at the young age of 16. Matthew is now 23.
So yeah, if there was a switch, yeah, definitely, I'd definitely switch it off. I'm a neuroscientist myself, so when I think about pain in a very neuropsychological way, but it does rule, yeah, indeed. Pain itself can be really undescribable, and it can obviously affect my whole body in terms of my weakness, my legs, but it's just a horrible, constant pain, usually in my hips and my lower back, where I just want to sort of dive and like a needle into my hip to relieve the pressure. I probably wouldn't be able to function day to day without painkillers. There's a period, about half a year, I was taking about 20 pills, 25 pills a day, just to get out of bed.
I guess the hard lesson I had to learn in my pain journey was just how much painkillers were actually part of the picture in stopping pain, or indeed, as I've learned, in managing pain. My pain consultant, Kathy Price, explained.
Most pain is associated with stuff to let you know about injury, and most of the painkillers shut up the little nerve endings, and they're quite good at doing that. The thing you can do about pain to begin with is to take some regular pain relief, and they should work if you haven't got too much of a souped up nervous system. If your nervous system's a bit souped up a bit more because the nerve endings have got damaged, say you've got diabetes, say you've got shingles, or say you've had a big operation, then sometimes you've got nerve damage pain, and that they're very specific painkillers that do work on the nerve endings. And again, they work quite well if it's just that's the problem. It's where it gets into the central nervous system is where you really begin to run into problems. And after a bit, then painkillers as such don't work.
You have to take a big step back and look at things like opioid or morphine-like drugs.
Dr. Jenner of the London Pain Clinic again.
One of the issues with taking them is dependency. And there are two types of dependency. There's physical dependence and psychological dependence. People become physically dependent on something like morphine because if they suddenly stop taking it, they will actually get physical withdrawal symptoms. They basically go cold turkey and it's bloody horrible for them. The other one is psychological dependence. That's where patients have got into a pattern of behaviour where they're persistently taking it. It's a combination of physical and psychological dependence that people have. And that's one of the biggest problems with opiates.
I think there's always the risk to not meaning to, but meaning to, you know, to abuse pain medication. I'd say at times, yes, when I'm in severe pain, I will take more than I'm meant to, just because one way that the tolerance are built up against them. But it does come to a point where I try and take them when needed, but at scheduled times every day, just so I know I've got a dosage in my body, so I don't go into pain. I'm very fed up with having to take pills every day.
Imagine you've just had an operation. You have a background aching pain all the time. But you're also getting an annoying stabbing pain. It keeps coming back. Your doctor decides it's okay to give you some painkillers to quieten down that pain. You get some relief. The painkiller doesn't stop the pain, but it doesn't bother you so much. When you leave hospital, the background aches and pains have faded away, but you are left with that recurring stabbing pain. You continue to take the painkillers regularly, and crucially, even when the pain doesn't reoccur. You're now so fed up of that pain, you fear it. When that happened to me, I was taking the painkillers to ease anxieties of pain, instead of to quieten down the pain itself. Painkillers don't cure anxiety, although some of them quieten them down in the short run. In the long term, for me, they fueled my anxieties. Because my pain was no longer acute due to an imminent danger, it had become persistent.
I guess they shut up the pain sensory fibres a bit because they replace some of the things that aren't working so well or add a bit more to it. Where that goes wrong, though, is when the pain system picks up all this information, it winds it all up, the brain is alive, and then everything's gone away, but it's forgotten to switch off. So what we look at with chronic pain is that the nervous system's not shut up, and that's the basic fault. With chronic pain, actually painkillers don't work. The nervous system's changed too much, and that we can get lulled into a very false sense of security where things appear to work to begin with, and then they fail.
So what now? I'm going to have pain for the rest of my life. The pain is unnecessary, and now even painkillers won't stop it. But for me, this is where mindfulness came in. I used a meditation course to teach me how to be mindful, so I could manage my pain without pills. So what is this mumbo jumbo concept? Well, here is your first lesson in mindfulness. This is happening right now. So pay attention to Dr. David Cox from GetSomeHeadspace.com.
There was a great study in Harvard that basically found out that 47% of your waking hours you spend thinking about something that isn't happening now. The opposite of that is being mindful. And being mindful, literally, as we define it, is choosing to have your attention in the present moment with an inquisitive, soft mind, so non-judgmental. It's not about reacting to what's going on now, it's just about observing it. People think they're in the now, and that's because they're doing, but not necessarily because they're thinking in the here and now. Mindfulness is about having your attention about everything that's going on outside of you, inside of you, your senses, your thoughts, your feelings, and just watching them. So we have some animations that help explain. There's one in particular of little cars, and above each car there's like a sort of a thought or emotion bubble.
Imagine yourself sat down on the edge of a very busy road. Now, before you start to meditate, it's a little bit like having a blindfold on. You're aware of all the sort of the background noise, the stress of the environment, but you're not really able to see what it is that's causing the stress. Now, when you start to meditate, it's like taking the blindfold off, and all of a sudden you see much more clearly the thoughts and feelings in the mind. You get to understand why and how you feel the way you do. The temptation, of course, is to run out into the road and start trying to control the traffic, chasing after the sort of the pleasant thoughts, trying to stop the unpleasant thoughts. But that's really quite exhausting. It's about holding your seat on the side of the road, getting used to allowing that autonomous flow of traffic to just come and go, the thoughts and the feelings of the mind. And when you do that, the volume of traffic on the road starts to decrease and the space between the cars starts to increase.
Anybody can try this. Next time you have an itch, don't scratch it. Just pay attention to it. What does it actually feel like? Is it constant? Does it come and go? Does it get stronger? Does it get weaker? Does it change? Are there different kinds of itch? These are all the questions of a mind that is inquisitive to the sensation that it's feeling. And that sensation can be anything. It can be an itch. It can also be pain.
Think about it like this. Imagine your pain as the TV in the room.
This is BBC News, I'm Anita McVeigh.
First of all, take all of the colour out of the picture. It starts to lose its substance, right? Then, turn the volume right down. All of a sudden, it's less prominent in the room. This is the way I see mindfulness. Like a volume remote, literally turning down the intensity of my pain.
So what we've got here is this distinction between the actual physical sensation and the way you emotionally react to it. And what the studies show is that mindfulness doesn't change the physical sensation at all, but it very much changes your emotional response to it. Even though they still have the same amount of pain that they had before, they're just better able to deal with it.
So can pain sufferers really learn to reduce their pain by managing their response to it? And as part of a wider program of treatments, is there a significant difference that can be made using psychological methods to improve the lives of persistent pain sufferers? I'll leave you with the pain consultants, Dr. Jenna, and mine, Dr. Kathy Price.
I would say, well, Jamie, I think you're a great example, actually. I'd be so impressed by everything that you've managed to achieve. Yes, we do see quite a lot of people who've come through this. You've got to trust the people that you're talking to, and you know it's important to accompany them on that journey.
So to answer the question, can we stop pain? Well, you see all the time people who they'll have problem X, they'll have treatment Y, they'll start off in the treatment, this work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, oh, this works. So yes, it is possible to do that.
You can reshape the nervous system. We know that for many people, as you practice these techniques and keep going with them, then the pain reduces astronomically down to much more manageable levels. And some people say it goes away altogether. And if you can't get rid of it altogether, then it isn't always the end of the world.
Pain is for danger. If I'm not in danger, then I'm not in pain. It's not been easy, but I've managed to retrain my brain so that once again, pain is only there to tell me when I'm in danger. The persistent pain I still suffer from is useless pain. And although I can't turn it off, now, I can turn it down.